Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening and sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. Know that it's really appreciated, and please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, you can all do me a huge favor. When this show is over, please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. And I guarantee you, when this show is over, you will all know somebody that can benefit from this show. Now, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and sometimes fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is one that many people can relate to. It's chronic pain. And according to the National Institute of Health's National Center of Complementary and Integrative Health, 25.3 million American adults suffer from daily pain. So with us to address questions on this subject and so much more is Sarah Ann Shockley. Sarah is the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living with and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. Sarah has been a regular columnist for the Pain News Network and is a regular contributor to The Mighty, which is a 1.5 million member online community for those living with chronic illness and pain. And she also lives with chronic pain herself. A native of Connecticut, Sarah is a multiple award-winning producer and director of educational films, including Dancing from the Inside Out, the highly acclaimed documentary on disabled dance. Now, she has traveled extensively for business and pleasure, and her first book, Traveling Incognito, is a guidebook for international travelers, which won a Critics' Choice Award. Sarah holds an MBA in international marketing and has worked with high-tech management as a corporate trainer and teaching undergraduate and graduate business administration. Sarah, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you, Alan. It's great to be here. Really appreciate it.
I gotta tell you, I really enjoyed reading the book, and one of the main things that I got from it, because there are lots of books that are written out there that are, you know, that are things to help, and we appreciate those. Mm-hmm. I found that yours provided help, but it also provided hope. You know, it really made me feel like, you know, anybody that's reading this is going to go, you know what, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can work towards that. So,
oh, that's great.
So thank you for that.
You're
so,
welcome.
As I mentioned in the beginning, in the introduction, that you also live with chronic pain yourself. If you don't mind, can you tell us your story and how long you've been living with chronic pain?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. In the fall of 2007, so it's been a while now, been more than 10 years, I was diagnosed with thoracic outlet syndrome. That's a collapse of the between the clavicles, which are the collarbones, and the first rib. So it's a structural collapse in the body. For me, it came about from using a laptop computer, but a mini laptop, like a really small keyboard. Mm-hmm. So unwittingly, I was collapsing the top of my body for many, many hours a day for years.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually what happens is that the collapse it kind of finally caves in and completely collapses. So that area between the collarbones in the first rib is I think that's called the thoracic outlet. But in that area, which is already pretty narrow, you have the scalene muscle from the neck, which is a pretty substantial muscle that goes down from the neck to the ribs. And you have nerve ganglia, and you have a major artery and some veins. You've got a lot of things that have to sort of gracefully fit through that area. So when it collapses, all of those things are effectively squeezed and crunched, and it's extremely painful. I had it and still have it. I'm still working with it on both sides of the body. Usually people get it only on one side, and usually it affects more one area than another, like more the muscles or more the nerves or more the arteries. But for me, for some reason, I got the deluxe version on both sides and affected all three areas. So I had a very, very severe version of this, which didn't lend itself to treatment. There are some physical therapy exercises that people can do with thoracic outlet syndrome when it's much lighter than mine, and they can reverse it. And there is an operation that some people have, which I actually was grateful not to have to do, but it removes the first rib. It's kind of a pretty extreme operation, but for some people it does help. The surgeon I went to see said, yours is so extreme, this will not help you. And I was kind of relieved because that's not really where I wanted to go. relieved, not to relieved to hear that it was so bad, but he said this surgery is really intense and it's a long recovery process. And for me, it wouldn't necessarily fix the problem. So thoracic, TOS, we call it for short, thoracic outlet syndrome, is more pervasive than we realize. A lot of people have never heard of it, but my neurologist says that it's actually becoming more prevalent, unfortunately, with our use of computers and keyboards all the time. So listeners might want to just be aware to keep your, kind of be aware of that and keep your shoulders open and not allow yourself to sink down on top.
Well, and
what happened for me is, yes, please.
What I was going to say is that, as soon as you said what you had and how you got it, collectively, I felt the thousands of listeners out there all sit up straighter in their chair. Anybody watching this on a computer or listening on a computer, I felt them all sit up straighter. I did it myself, move my shoulders back a little bit going, oh yeah, that's right. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sharing that.
It's very important to get the word out because it is becoming more prevalent, and people can get it from car accidents, from a sudden impact on the top of the body, but it's also often from computer use. And it's just a matter of making sure your setup is ergonomic and you're standing up and walking around a lot and kind of opening your shoulders in the back, kind of you can press your shoulder blades together and open it up a little bit. But to be really aware if you're getting any tingling, any kind of numbness in your hands and arms, pay special attention, and the neck, go into those areas.
So I mentioned as we were in the introduction and some of my feelings in regards to the book and how I thought that it was different, but you're the one that wrote it. How do you feel that The Pain Companion is different from other books on pain?
Well, there are many valuable books out there, as you were saying, on pain, and most of them are written by doctors and practitioners to a large extent, either physical therapists or medical doctors of that kind of, they're usually writing about either a specific condition or their specific approach, their treatment, how they would end pain is pretty much what they often are about. Mine's different in that it's talking about when you are living in chronic pain, you've probably pretty much tried everything that's available to you, and it's chronic because those things aren't working yet. Let's be positive, but it's either been 3 months or 6 months or maybe years that you've been living with pain, and the treatments offered aren't ending it. So what I talk about is what happens, what's the experience of someone who's living with chronic pain? How does it affect you as a person? How does it affect your life? And how do you live with it? How do you get up in the morning and live with pain, with ongoing pain, and not sink into this well of despair and depression, which is so easy to do? We often become very, very isolated when we're in pain. We feel ashamed of ourselves for being in pain. We usually feel a sense of guilt and a lot of fears that come up with living with pain, uncertainty about the future. We often feel like we've lost our future, that there isn't one. So if you haven't lived with pain for a long time, I know listeners that have can relate to this, but it's not just, we treat it so much as just a medical thing. It's the knee's hurting, the foot's hurting, the neck's hurting, and we kind of compartmentalize it, or we try to, and say, well, the pain is here or the pain is there. But when pain stays around, it tends to infect, so to speak. It really influences it. It has an effect on the whole body. The rest of the body can become more in pain from compensating, from lack of sleep. There's a lot of things that happen from tension. You know, the whole body begins to feel like it's in pain, which it is. And but also just the living with pain is tremendously demanding and tremendously exhausting. So that comes into play. We often tend to feel like we've got almost a form of the flu all the time. A lot of times we have migraines that go with it. So there's a lot of things that go with it. It doesn't sort of stay in the knee or stay in the neck. It really affects the whole body. It also affects the whole person. And it begins to feel like pain is taking over life itself. So after time, we feel sometimes submerged by it and in it, as if it's surrounding us. It becomes our whole experience. So what I'm addressing in the book first off is all of the emotional responses we have, very difficult emotional challenges to living with pain, with physical pain. And I offer what I call antidotes, you know, ideas for how to reengage with life, even while we're in pain, so that we're not waiting for the pain to end. A lot of us do that. We want to wait for the pain to end before we sort of reconnect with life. And yet, when we're living with chronic pain, it's going on for years, we have to find ways to have a life despite the pain.
Now, see, I love the fact that you're talking about that. And I was recently at a dinner put on by the Gridiron Greats that had to do with football players going through chronic pain. And one of the I love the fact that they talked about the emotional side of this. And not only did they go into the emotional side, but they then said, now we want to bring up all of the family of the people going through this chronic pain because they're having to deal with this also. They're the ones that are the caretakers. Yeah. They're the ones that are also having to deal with the emotional pain of not only seeing this person that they love that's going through pain, but we don't always treat people real well when we're going through chronic pain, which means we're taking it out on somebody, and it's usually those people that are closest to us. So that was one of the things that I loved about the book, and I'm glad that you're touching on it, is all of the other aspects that come out of this that people may not necessarily recognize or think that, if the doctor gave you a pill for it, why didn't that solve everything?
Exactly. It's so important to be talking about that. I'm so glad they did that at that event, because we don't talk about the emotional aspects of living with physical pain enough. What happened for me is I was living with it. And, you know, I think this happens for a lot of people. The physical pain is so demanding. It's so in your face. It's so loud, in a sense. You wake up into it, you have to take your shower in it, you breakfast in it, you talk to people through the pain, you're trying to parent through the pain, you're trying to, if you're still working, you're working, or you're having to pull back from work, you're worrying about everything. So you're living in this immersion in pain, but you may not, because it's so demanding, we're not always noticing what's happening to us, you know, the us of us. Our feelings. It's not necessarily obvious to us, even those of us who are in the pain, that, that other things are going on, that we're, you know, beginning to feel lower and lower and lower. And that even just the sense of shame is so prevalent, and yet we may not recognize it right away. So, and we also, if we do, if we think, why am I feeling so awful about, you know, I call it feeling bad about feeling bad. And you think, I'm trying to deal with this pain, but I'm beginning to feel, you know, not myself. I don't know how to live through this. You know, I'm feeling sad and terrible and lonely. And we wake up in the middle of the night with panic attacks. And sometimes we think we're the only ones feeling like that. We don't know if this has never happened before. We don't know that this is sort of part of the pain package, that it's, I think of it even as a journey through the underworld, that you're really immersed in this very intense, seemingly dark journey, and you feel very, very alone in it. And it's true that nobody, in a sense, that nobody's in there with you. And it's true that it's your private experience of pain. But on the other hand, there are ways to reach out. And it's very important to understand that this sense of aloneness and the sense of being cut off and the sense that it's going to go on forever is part of what pain brings with it. It's not that you're wrong or you're crazy or you're going through something that nobody else has ever gone through. It's a common feeling. These are common feelings for people in pain. So a lot of my readers say what incredible relief they get just reading that somebody understands and articulates it for them. And for people that you mentioned, people working with people in pain, when they read the book, it helps them understand what somebody's going through. So it gives them some tools and some ways of understanding, oh, wow, they're feeling like that. No wonder, you know.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, this feeling of shame that comes in, and I know that that's something that's prevalent. How can we help change that? And both when I say we, being the person who's going through the pain, but also for those of us that are trying to care for those going through pain.
Yeah, that's a really good question. For the person who's in pain to know that it's, you know, we're on a human journey. And we live in a very pain-averse culture. We're not supposed to have pain in our culture in some weird way. If we have it, we're supposed to not show it. We're supposed to not talk about it. Keep it to yourself. Get over it as quickly as possible. It's not supposed to be there. So we have this idea that pain is intrinsically bad. And if you meet it on the path, something's gone wrong. You've gone wrong. You've made a mistake. You've failed. You've bumped, you know. So when we're holding pain in our bodies and when it won't go away, we begin to feel really bad about ourselves. If pain is intrinsically bad and I can't heal it, what's wrong with me? And why is this happening to me? And am I being punished? Is this a, you know, in a sense, a spiritual lesson? Is it karma? Is it, did I screw up my entire life? Well, I wasn't eating correctly. Did I, we worry about all the things that we did wrong. And I'd like to say to people that are in pain that, you know, it's part of the path. It's not necessarily that we want it or we, you know, have to have it all the time, but there is going to be a point on all of our paths. Every human on this planet is going to meet pain, physical, emotional, at some point, usually on many points on the path. And if we meet it and say, this is a mistake and it's wrong, then we begin to feel bad about ourselves. So to begin to release that sense that pain is a mistake, it's part of the human experience. It's how we meet it, not whether we're going to meet it. And on the other side, when we were talking about, you know, those of us who are also talking to people who are in pain, to really be aware of our own feelings about pain. Sometimes I think our own fears about it happening to us or being in pain makes us want to be almost over helpful, where we want to give advice and we want to sometimes rather overtly accuse the person of not trying hard enough. We get that a lot. People who are in pain get a lot of, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Why don't you do this? Why are you sure you're doing that right? Are you, you know, maybe you should go to this doctor. And so there's a lot of pressure on people in pain to hurry up and get better like yesterday. And that adds that sense of shame and failure.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that is that from that standpoint, you know, that can almost be insulting because it's like, you don't think with what I'm going through that I haven't tried all of those things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you many times I have been angry at people that come up to me and they're doing it. Well, I think out of a couple reasons. One, sometimes they're practitioners and they want to impress that they are really good at what they do. And sometimes it's just out of pure helpfulness. They really want to help you. And then other times it's their own discomfort with pain. It's really hard to see someone in pain and you want it to stop, but you want it to stop for them, but you also want to stop it to stop for yourself. So part of it is that we need to become a little more aware, I think, in our whole culture. Our pain paradigm is really off and begin to understand that sometimes people are going to be in pain and sometimes we're going to be around people in pain. And it isn't necessarily a burden. It's what people are going through. And to kind of be aware, that can help a lot to just understand that. And yes, absolutely, to have someone come up to you and the first thing they say before, I mean, I've really had this happen to me many times. As soon as they find out I've got something going on physically, they'll say something like, well, you don't have to be in pain. I can fix that. Oh. And I'm like, you haven't even asked me what's going on. Yeah, I feel like, and it does feel like kind of what you said, like, I'm not stupid. Like I've been in this, you haven't even found out how long I've been in this. You haven't found out what I've already done. You don't. So to just understand that it can be very insulting to propose to someone that you know the answer when they've been working with it for maybe many years. And it does come from that whole paradigm that nobody should ever be in pain. And I think we need to kind of back away from that and understand that sometimes people are going through pain. It doesn't make them wrong. It doesn't make the pain wrong. It's just something we do. It's like aging. Nobody wants to age, but we're all going to go through that sometime. It's how we go through it. And meeting loss. I found that talking about pain and dealing with pain is similar to the way we deal with grief, in that we often don't let people have their grief. You know, that they've gone through something incredible, a loss of a parent or our child, and we want them to hurry up and get back to work. Don't think about it. Don't talk about that person with that person. You know, you might, as if we talked about it, it would make it worse, when in fact, the opposite is true. If we talk about it with compassion and we really allow ourselves to go through it, we're going to feel the pain, but it's going to move through. And I feel, and there's certainly also a lot of grief involved in physical pain, the feeling that you've lost your life to it. But I think physical pain is similar to emotional pain in that way, and that turning away from it and pretending that it shouldn't be there and it can't be there and we have to hurry up and just end it kind of short circuits the healing. It's not necessarily helpful. It's like we need to learn how to be with it first.
Well, and that's, you know, you bring up a great point. And when you mention it in regards to grief, I know that many of us are very uncomfortable with grief or being around someone who is grieving, and we don't know what the right thing is, because on one hand, there's the thought process is, well, they probably don't want to talk about it, so I'll avoid it. But then the concern is, well, if I just avoid it, maybe they're going to think I don't care. And so then it's a matter of, okay, then I'll ask them how they're doing, you know. And so you ask them how they're doing, and then the helper bee goes, well, have you tried this? Or, you know, could you do this with this help and stuff?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think all of us, and like you said, it doesn't make anybody a bad guy or anything else. It's just something that we're not comfortable with. And it's interesting because you mentioned in your book, and I think this is what you're talking about now, where you talk about creating a relationship, you know, with the pain in your body. So for the person who's going through it, what exactly do you mean by that? And, you know, and what are some of the things that has shown you that this is a good thing to do?
Well, that's great. I think one of the first most important things is to recognize the emotional aspects that we were just talking about. And then I talk about creating a different relationship with the pain in your body. And this can be, a lot of people have used this also for emotional pain as well, but so you can do this with the emotional pain or with the physical pain, but I'm talking primarily about the physical pain. So when we start out, when we're in pain, first off, what we usually do is we want it to end. That's the first place we go. And part of that is from the pain paradigm that I talked about earlier. I mean, it's because it hurts, we don't like it, but because we also label it as bad and a mistake, we think we have to kill it when we use pain medications as painkillers. And the way we see pain, it informs the way we respond to it, which is, you know, most of what we're given to respond to is either kill it or put up with it. And then that, I have found, informs the way that we experience it, which then creates the way that we heal or don't heal. So we kind of have this line going from bad, bad, bad. And if we can start thinking about pain a little bit differently, then we can start about thinking about creating a different response to it, a different relationship to it. So if we can start thinking about pain, it's not necessarily something we want to joyfully, you know, run up to and embrace. That would be great if we were that open, but, you know, who's going to do that? So it's because it's painful, and we don't necessarily want to look for pain. I'm not saying that, but when it shows up, can we think of it instead as a messenger, a signal from the body, something with a positive purpose? So pain is here to inform us. Pain is here to guide us. Pain is here to teach us about what we need to do to change in order to heal something. So in a way, pain is the voice of the part of us that's asking for healing, asking for attention. And usually the kind of attention we give it is to sort of beat it up or push it away or try to cut it out of the body or whatever. You know, it's not the attention that's really, I think, necessarily asking for. And I believe, and what I found in my experience, is that actually tends to hold pain in place. It tends to actually make it worse. And it's partly the emotional and mental aspect, but it's also physiologically, if we're pushing against something, we're and resisting it and just trying to get rid of it, we're tensing up, we're contracting around the pain, we're not breathing deeply, we're, you know, everything is affected physiologically as well. And so my feeling that in order to begin the healing process, particularly with pain that's been sticking around, that's just not moving, is to back off from that sort of battlefield aspect of it and to begin to look at how we can respond and relate to pain differently. And I just, what I did for myself is began to make up some creative ways of being with pain differently. So I thought, well, if this isn't working, and this had been after I'd been in pain for like 5 years and it just wasn't going away, and my putting up with it and living with it and being very stoic and strong wasn't healing it. And I thought, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. It's not moving. And in fact, it's slowly getting worse. So I thought, what if I do the opposite of fighting? Because fighting absolutely didn't work for me. It made my body, when my body tenses up, my pain shoots through the roof. So I had to learn how to be very relaxed. So I went in the opposite direction, just put up with it. But I thought there must be some space in the middle there that's more healing than this. So I started off by actually venting a bit. I wrote letters to pain, you know, and why are you still here? I can't stand you. Why are you still in my body? What's going on? I've tried everything. I'm being good, blah, blah, blah. And just vented my feelings about living with pain. I've got some of those letters in the book about, you know, that my questions and my experience. What is it like to be? You know, why are you still here, pain? And I addressed pain as a practically as a person. And I thought, well, what if pain was kind of like a being, even though it's part of me? What if I kind of imagined it as a personality? Or sometimes it feels like it's somebody that's moved in with you that you never invited. And it really does start to feel like a force and energy in your life. So I thought, well, what would pain look like if I invited it to the door?
Well,
so
Sarah,
I did that in my imagination. Yes.
What I was going to say is that we need to take a break, but I think this is a great place.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and what I want everybody to know is that, you know, stay with us, because first of all, Sarah's going to tell us what that looks like, as well as, you know, why you might advocate making friends with pain. So I want everybody to stay with us. If you want to follow along with us, again, we're talking with Sarah Ann Shockley, and you can follow along with us by going to thepaincompanion.com. So we're going to take a break now. Go ahead, open up another window, go to thepaincompanion.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. I'm Alan Cardoza. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest is Sarah Ann Shockley, and we are talking about chronic pain. Now, as when we went to break, one of the things that Sarah was talking about was looking at pain as a separate being and addressing it as a separate being. So my question is, most of us think of pain as an enemy. Why do you advocate making friends with it?
Well, I'll finish the little story that I was telling. And I was talking about imagining pain coming to the door to just see, you know, kind of try to begin to have a dialogue with pain in a sense. And when I opened the door in my mind's eye, I sort of expected a demonic thing to be there, you know, something very fiery. I have a lot of nerve pain, which is very burning. And instead there was Hermes, or Mercury, the messenger of the gods, in his little silver outfit. And I thought, oh, wow, pain is a messenger. And that's where I got the thought, oh, pain might be here with a positive purpose. Pain is here to actually help me heal. It feels like an enemy. It feels like an invader. But if I try to fight it in that way, for me, I wasn't getting anywhere. And a lot of people spend years. It's extremely exhausting to fight pain every day. Now, I don't mean that we want to give up, not that at all, but taking that energy and using it to instead work with pain as an ally, I have found it to be much more healing. It does something to relax. The body relaxes around that. As soon as we drop that stance of pain as an enemy and begin to realize, oh, it's actually the voice of it's the part of me that's hurting, talking to me, asking for attention. And the kind of attention that I'm giving it may need to shift in order to heal. So thinking about pain as something that's asking for help rather than something we just have to get rid of. And of course, we all want pain to end. But a lot of times when we're kind of locked in that battleground with pain on one side and all of our medications and treatments and everything on the other side, and we can't move that at all, we might want to back off, kind of take off our armor and begin to see what we can do to, in a sense, yes, befriend pain. Walk with it down the path as a partner. Because I've found that when we're just stuck in that battle mode or in denial, either one of those is kind of a stuck place, we're not moving forward. We're just standing still fighting it. And if it won't move, it must still have something it needs to communicate. If pain's not leaving, there's a reason. And the reason is, I need something different. I need something to change here. I need the body is saying, I still need something to shift. And by fighting it, we may be bypassing some of the messages it's trying to give us just in terms of how we can heal. So just that shift can open the mind up even to greater possibilities for healing, because suddenly we're not closed down. We're not seeing it just as negative. We're opening up to, well, okay, let's walk together. How can I be different with you, pain? And pain, surprisingly, may talk to you and tell you, well, I need you to rest more. A lot of us, it's surprising, but we may be in terrible pain, and yet we're pushing, 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 trying to get through the pain as if our pushing is going to make it end. It's what we're taught to do. We're taught to never give up, and that if we don't fight, we're giving up. We're taught this very polarized idea, and we're taught to be strong and resourceful and carry on, and our culture is very into independence and, you know, and goal setting and, you know, keeping going. And that we tend to apply that to the way we are with healing and with pain. And it doesn't necessarily seem to be what the body's asking for, that kind of response. So when we begin to turn towards pain with a kind of a friendlier eye and say, okay, I don't like you. I don't like you having to be here, but understand you're here for a purpose. What can I do? How do I help you? What can I give to you, pain? Which is not our normal question. We may find that it's saying, yeah, I need you to slow down. I need you to not be so anxious. You don't have to be the perfect person, perfect patient. You don't have to heal today. It's going to take a little time. Give me a little time, but relax around a little more. It's hard to do because pain is difficult to relax around, but just kind of working on relaxing around the pain rather than necessarily making it end. Just, okay, you're going to be here for a little while. I'm going to just be with that. Kind of the way we shift. I work a lot with breath and awareness and shifting the way we breathe. And in a sense, allowing pain a little bit of breath, allowing pain a little more space, which sounds absolutely counterintuitive, like the worst thing to do, and you would never want to do that. That again stems from my idea that pain is the enemy, and if we give it anything, it's just going to take over everything. But doing almost the opposite and just being softer with it, to me, that has done a lot more. And finally, for me, pain started to move because we were moving together rather than locked in that stalemate.
And then again, that makes perfect sense. perfect sense, especially the part in regards to breath, because there's so many studies now in regards to how that can help us. We have a question, a listener question coming in via email. This one is, I suffer from fibromyalgia and have tried everything to get relief for more than 10 years. I was very excited to read the reviews on your book, and I just wanted to tell you that I bought it, read it, and am already successfully practicing the meditations. I just wish I had read your book sooner, but I guess it sometimes takes someone who has actually lived with debilitating pain to find solutions. Passing out pills just isn't the way. Thank you from Joanne in Washington.
Joanne, I'm so pleased to hear that. Thank you so much for writing that in. It's a lot of times I think that the healing, you know, it's we heal ourselves ultimately, of course. Mm-hmm. The medications don't heal us, we do. And I think it is important to hear from each other around this. And I'm really honored to have been able to write this and be able to articulate it in such a way that it could help others. But I think that it there is an aspect of healing in which it is one person who's in it and understands it speaking to another who's in it. There is, it's not all, again, I was talking earlier about how we make pain just a medical condition. And yet we're complete human beings. We're spiritual, we're emotional, we're mental, and we're physical. And we're all living in that body. And I feel like part of healing that we've kind of pushed aside recently in our medical paradigm is that human-to-human healing. And that's so important to have our pain seen and recognized and acknowledged and validated by somebody who knows it, at least not specifically your exact pain, but knows about living with pain for a long time and knows what it entails and how hard it is, and also how important it is to be seen in it, to be acknowledged. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Oh, and Joanne mentions, you know, quote, passing out pills isn't the way. And I know that in your book, you talk about, you know, that you don't use pain medications. So explain why you don't use them.
Well, there's two reasons. One is that I was brought up as somebody who would, we always did everything naturally in my household. We were kind of health nuts from the beginning. So it wouldn't be the first place I would go to anyway. I would look for alternatives, but I have used them when I had an appendectomy some years ago, and I was really happy to have what they had, the morphine. And I mean, I needed it and I took it and I was delighted to have it. So I'm not against pain medications per se, but I do tend to look for a more natural route if I can. And the other thing for me is that I tried different nerve medications and the side effects were horrible and they didn't really do much for the nerve pain for me. So I was sort of forced to develop my non-pharmaceutical method. But I do want to say that I am completely supportive of people that do need to use medications. There are people that cannot function without them. So it's absolutely correct that we don't want to just throw pills at pain and that's the only answer, because that's not working. We're having problems with overdoses and addictions and all sorts of, when we mix things up and the side effects, it's not working. So that can't be the only answer. So it's learning how to work with them judiciously and making that, if we can, a stopgap, and doing all these other things as well, because everything else is what's going to heal us. The pain medications isn't necessarily, I mean, it could be healing somewhat in that it's allowing you to sleep. That's really important. And it's allowing to function, but we also want to do everything else we can around healing ourselves beyond that.
Yeah, I think that was very well put. I agree. And I love your term of it's a stopgap, but it's not the long-term solution. Now we have another listener question coming in, and this one reads, my son was injured in a football game 2 years ago as a junior in high school. His back took many months to heal, and the residuals from damage to his spine left him unable to participate in his greatest love, which was contact sports of football and hockey. During the first 8 months, the doctor had him on pain medications, and we had no idea he was becoming addicted to them. As he is 18 and living with roommates, We believe from his attitude and personality changes that he's now doing more serious drugs. Would your book be one that could give us guidance and is one he might be receptive to reading? And this is from Greg in Virginia.
Hi, Greg. Thank you so much. Boy, this is such, I hear these kinds of stories and I feel so sad. That is part of the problem of throwing pills, throwing things at people, especially young people, when their brain's developing, when they're, you know, it does tend to create an addictive problem. And I think the doses tend to be a bit high and, you know, all of that goes on. So, yes, I think there can be something in the book. I don't specifically address addiction, so it's not a book about that. But it is, he may find some relief there in being, again, being seen and understood in that intense thing that he's going through. I have people tell me that they read it and they apply it to their addictions. It's just not something I specifically say it's about. You know, it's not specifically addressing that. But it does address any long-term emotional pain that something that you that won't move, and that can be helpful. I would say it's so hard to lose something like that. I can absolutely, I mean, I don't know, I can't say that happened to me in that way, but I know that I was very active and I was a single mom, and overnight my life seemed to end because I couldn't do anything physically. I could barely walk, then I could barely use my arms and hands. So my life was reduced to drinking a cup of tea was about what I did all day. And that's literally the case. I'd drive my son to school and I'd sit around and drink a cup of tea and try to like just live through the pain and then go get him. So so this loss of what you love, this loss of your connection to life is so very difficult. And it makes that addiction problem, again, I'm not a specialist in addiction, but it adds to that because you feel like you've lost so much. So there are suggestions in the book about how to reconnect with life. I call it throwing lines back out to life, you know, where you find that you think you've lost everything and it just demands that you have to find another way to be and another way to find your joys and your loves in life again. And it's a hard path. I'll never say that it's an easy thing to do. Your son's got a hard path in front of him, but he sounds like, I mean, he's resilient. He's gotten through some part of it. And, I don't think it would hurt anything to, offer him the book and see what happens. And I'm always open to connecting. If he wants to reach out to me, there's a contact form on my website, and I'm always, always delighted to hear from people.
Yeah. And just to add to that, again, having read the book, I think it would be very advantageous because a lot of it is just that reading it, I think, tells that person I'm not alone. I think that would be one of the first things that he would get out of it is, wow, I'm not alone. There are others out there that are having this struggle. And that, I think, is the first step to wherever he goes from there, you know, if it ends up being an addiction and it needs to go through treatment to get rid of the addiction, that's fine. But first step of not knowing he's alone and feeling like, you know, there are other people out there that I can get help with, I think would be huge.
Yeah, it can be very cathartic to do that and begin the first step towards something different. Because it's a very different approach to looking at pain. It's more life-affirming than many, many.
Yeah, in fact, and we're talking about some of the things that you can do to help you get through. And I know one of the things you do in the book is you advocate people telling their pain story. So share a little bit about that in regards to, you know, who should they tell and how. And a little bit about what good it does, because I think there's people out there or people that will go, you know what, I know somebody that tells me their story and they've told me it so many times it's driving me crazy. You know, so that's
well, there's
where
a difference between telling the story and telling the story. Yeah, that's good. Understand. I think what happens is that we again, it's this pain averse culture we live in. We're told not to talk about our pain and we're not taught how to talk about it or how to listen. So I think I found for myself that I was keeping so much inside. I didn't want to burden other people. people aren't necessarily ready to listen to people in pain for lots of reasons. It feels like it's scary. It's scary to see people in pain and hear about their pain story. And we're kind of averse to hearing about any deep emotions. It's just a thing about our culture that I'd like to see shifting. So, but to be in tremendous physical pain and tremendous emotional pain and not be able to express it is very, very difficult. It absolutely increases the sense of isolation and being cut off from others, being cut off from life, and being cut off from yourself. And you're kind of whirling around in your own world in there, thinking that nobody understands, nobody knows what you're going through, nobody else has been there. It's part of pain to make it feel like it is very, it cuts you off. It's part of the illusion of it is that you are totally alone and that there's nobody there for you and that nobody else has ever felt like that and it will never end. That's part of the intensity of what it feels like. So I do advocate people finding a way to express the pain they're in, physical and emotional, and that can be through creative means. It can be through art. It can be through movement. If you can move, even if you can move a small amount, just starting to let it express, it can be through moaning. It can be through yelling. It can be through any way that you can find that isn't going to, you know, alarm the people around you. If you can find a private way, you have to yell into your pillow. But, and going out in nature, talking to a tree, I mean, talking to your dog, that's really helpful. But talking to another person, I think, is the most helpful. And what I mean by telling your pain story is, I think what happens when you mention people that tell their story over and over again is I think what happens is they've never felt actually heard. And that's why they keep telling it over and over again. So as people who are listening to a pain story, we want to be really present and we want to really allow that person to tell the whole thing and not try to make them different. What we tend to do is we tend to try to jump in and make them different. And that short circuits that process of telling a story. That's why they have to keep telling it over and over. So if we stop and just let it be what it is, not try to fix it, not offer advice, not say, did you try this? Did you try that? Well, probably you didn't eat, you know, your Wheaties, you know, whatever it was, you know, you didn't do the right thing when you were five. Just leave all that out. Don't try to fix anything. As the person who's listening, just hold the space and be with the person and let them be in their pain. Which sounds, again, counterintuitive because we're afraid that if we do that, it'll make it worse. It doesn't. It lets it be where it is, and that is a huge relief for the person who's in pain. Sure. So, again, and the person, and I'm talking to people who are in pain, the person to tell this to could be almost anyone in your life as long as you can explain to them that they need to be available to listen. So you do want to find a good listener, if you can. It often helps to find somebody, it may be somebody you're not even that close to in your life, but they have been through something painful themselves. They tend to be a little more available for, I understand. I understand why you need to tell me this. People who haven't gone through something intensely painful like this may not really grok why you would need to do this, and they may be harder for them to just sit still and be quiet and hold the space. And of course, if you can't find anybody, there are professionals. I think it's a step down. I think the first thing is to find somebody that you can relate to that's in your life already. But if you can find a professional, and you'd have to, again, you'd have to set the groundwork with a therapist. Therapists sometimes are trying to help you.
Sure.
And what you really want when you're telling your story is not to be helped in that moment, to just be heard and seen and acknowledged. That's so important.
Well, speaking of acknowledging, Sarah, I just really want to acknowledge you for writing the book and getting this information out there, because I think that you are helping just, I mean, I don't know how many it's sold, but yeah, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, deal with something that, again, as I brought up in the very beginning, you know, that there's 25.3 million American adults that suffer from pain daily. So I just really want to acknowledge
you.
Thank you for putting this together. Just the last part, I'm probably as guilty as anybody of being the person who, when somebody starts talking about it, goes directly to trying to fix it or whatever.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now, is it best, as you're saying, to listen, and then when they get done, just to end with, how can I help? Or is it?
I almost think that that's too soon.
Okay.
When you're just listening to the story, that's how you're helping. That's the best thing. That is the most healing thing you can do for that person. That is your help, is to sit and listen and see them, look in their eyes, be present. And you can say things like, wow, that sounds like that was really difficult. I can't even imagine that, you know, I wouldn't say a whole lot, but just you can acknowledge that you get that you, wow, I can see that was really hard for you. And if tears come to your eyes, let tears come to your eyes. But then just say, thank you so much for telling me that. I had no idea. And leave it at that.
Okay.
That's your help. And let that sink in. Let that person receive the fact they were seen and heard, and nobody said you're wrong for being where you're at. Because remember, every time we try to help someone, we're telling them they're wrong for being where they're at. And so just they've heard it, you know, everybody's trying to help them, and everybody in pain is trying to heal as fast as they can already. So if they ask you for your advice, if they ask you for help, if do you have any ideas about that, that's very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
But in this instance, I just, you know, it's hard to do because we want to help. Just kind of bite your tongue and say, thank you so much for honoring me with your story.
Well,
that in itself would be hugely healing.
Sarah, thank you so much for honoring us with your story.
Thank you. I really very much appreciate being here today. Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when our guest will be Amber Ray to discuss her new book, Choose Wonder Over Worry. And when you get a chance, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you could subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, and it will be there waiting for you. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. And as I said in the beginning, you know, everybody will know somebody who is dealing with this. So take this show, send it out to the person that you know that is dealing with chronic pain, or to your social media group. You will then be doing what we're trying to do here, and that is together to make a positive difference in the lives of others. Thank you for being with us, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.